thinking, and new ideas to go where no man has ever gone before. Fear holds people back. The second major obstacle to flexibility, to challenging and questioning the status quo, is fear of all kinds, but especially the fear of failure. What if we try something new and it doesn't work? According to the October 2013 Harvard Business Review, the major obstacles to business model innovation are fear and uncertainty. 80% of corporate executives rank business model innovation ahead of the development of new products and services in terms of importance. But they don't know how to do it, so they procrastinate and hope that the next generation of leaders will make the changes that will be necessary to survive and thrive. Feeling unable to change. The third reason that people fear and resist change is learned helplessness. The individuals responsible know that change is essential, but they feel that they are helpless, caught up in the complexities of the current situation and unable to change. Learned helplessness is expressed in the words, "I can't," or "we can't." What then follows is a litany of excuses in terms of not enough time, not enough money, not enough available talent, and other explanations for why change is not possible that involve a number of external pressures and internal limitations. But as Winston Churchill said, if you don't fight when you have a chance of victory, you will soon have to fight when you have no chance at all. The rule is to change when you can, not when you have to or when you have no other choice. They should have told this to the executives at Blockbuster, who dominated the market for video movies to be viewed at home. When Netflix came along, the people at Blockbuster dismissed it as a small company that could never challenge the dominance of Blockbuster in the national market. But customer tastes had changed, and within a few years, Netflix was the biggest player in the delivery of movies, both by mail and now online, and Blockbuster was bankrupt. Open up your thinking. There are several powerful, practical thinking tools that you can use to unlock your creativity, expand your thinking, and move yourself out of the comfort zone. The all-around champion tool to change your perspective and to develop higher levels of flexibility is called zero-based thinking. Zero-based thinking comes from zero-based accounting. In zero-based accounting, you challenge every expense at the beginning of every accounting period. You ask not whether you should increase or decrease a particular expense, but whether or not you should be spending money in this area at all. In zero-based thinking, you ask the brutal question, is there anything that we are doing today that, knowing what we now know, we wouldn't start up again if we had to do it over? Do a quink analysis. Apply a quink, knowing what I now know, analysis to every part of your business and personal life. Is there anything that you are doing today that you wouldn't get into again today if you had to do it over, knowing what you now know? How do you know if you are dealing with a zero-based thinking situation? Simple. The answer is stress. If you are wrestling with something in your life that you wouldn't get into again today, you will continually experience stress, worry, anger, frustration, and dissatisfaction in that area or with some person. This negative situation often permeates your conversation, distracts you throughout the day, and keeps you awake at night. Start with your relationships. In zero-based thinking, start with your relationships of all kinds. Is there any person in your business or personal life that you would not get involved with again if you had to do it over? Is there anyone in your business whom you would not hire, assign, delegate, promote, or even go to work for today, knowing what you now know? Is there someone whom you would not get involved with again today? Then the only question is, how do you end the situation and how fast? Can you guess how many of your decisions will turn out to be wrong in the fullness of time? According to the American Management Association, fully 70% of decisions made in the world of work, and probably in personal life, turn out to be wrong eventually. They can be a little bit wrong, a lot wrong, or totally wrong. To develop high levels of flexibility, to perform at your best, you must be prepared to make the three statements of the superior executive. Admit that you're not perfect. Statement number one is, I was wrong. Look around you at your situation, and especially at those areas that are causing you stress, dissatisfaction, or unhappiness, and be willing to admit that you were wrong. When you made the decision or got into the situation, it seemed like the right thing to do. Based on the information you had at the time, it was quite logical, but the answers have changed. You have learned things that you did not know before, and the external situation and requirements have changed as well. What seemed to be the right decision when you made it has turned out to be the wrong decision today. As soon as you admit that you were wrong and take action to correct the situation, your stress evaporates. Sometimes people think that by admitting they are wrong, they are demonstrating weakness. They think people will not respect them if they admit they were wrong in a decision they made and defended in the past. But it is exactly the opposite. In times of turbulence and rapid change, having the courage and character to admit that you were wrong, when the mistake is probably clear to everyone around you, actually increases their respect for you and their willingness to be influenced by you in the future. On the other hand, there is no one who looks more weak and foolish than someone who is obviously wrong, but who refuses to admit it. Here's an interesting point. When you identify a situation that you would not get into again today, knowing what you now know, it is too late to save the situation or the person. It is over. The only question now is, how much time, money, trouble, and pain are you going to lose or suffer before you admit that you were wrong and take whatever action is necessary to rectify the situation? Admit you made a mistake. Statement number two is, I made a mistake. Because of ego, many people find it difficult to admit that they have made a mistake, even when they obviously have, and it is clear to everyone around them. Don't let this happen to you. Because you're going to be wrong and make mistakes fully 70% of the time, don't wait for everyone to figure it out. Instead, jump ahead of the curve and quickly admit, I was wrong, I made a mistake, and then rectify the situation as quickly as you can. Change your mind. The third statement that you can make is, I changed my mind. Again, changing your mind when you get new information is a mark of courage, character, and flexibility, not of weakness. Even if you have spent 18 months developing a new business or product strategy, if you get new information that invalidates your key conclusions, be prepared to change your mind, to abandon the now obsolete strategy in favor of doing something new, different, and more appropriate to the current situation. The more readily you can say those words, I was wrong, I made a mistake, I changed my mind, the better you will think and the more respected you will be by all the people around you. Reevaluate your business and career. The second area where you apply zero-based thinking has to do with every aspect of your business and career, including and especially your business model. Is there any product or service that, knowing what you now know, you would not bring to the current market? Is there any process, method, or expense in your business that you would not start up again today, knowing what you now know? Is there anything in your current strategy that, knowing what you now know, you would not get into again today if you had to do it over? Is there any part of your career, the work you do, the activities you engage in, that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get into again today? Remember, it's quite common for people to have many different jobs, in different companies and industries, using different skills over the course of a lifetime. Many people decide to start over in a new field and learn an entire new set of skills when the economy changes. Could this apply to you? If the answer is yes, then the next question is, how do you get out of this situation or discontinue it, and how fast? Evaluate your investments. The third area for zero-based thinking has to do with investments, especially those of time, money, and emotion. In accounting, there is a category called sunk costs. This is an amount of money that has been spent and is gone forever. It cannot be recouped. It is like dropping an anvil off a ship in the middle of the ocean. You can never get it back. It is gone. It is a sunk cost. It's amazing how many businesses and individuals are confused in this area. They are constantly trying to recover sunk costs. This is called throwing good money after bad, or throwing money down a rat hole. Your investment is gone forever. This refusal to accept the fact of a sunk cost is especially true with regard to time. Is there any area of your life where you have invested a large amount of time in a project, a service, a person, or even the development of a skill that is no longer helpful or necessary? Be prepared to recognize that this past investment of time has now become a sunk cost. Accept it, move on, and don't invest any more time in an area where, in your heart, you know it is not the best use of your time and effort. The second area of sunk costs has to do with investments. Is there any financial investment that, knowing what you now know, you would not make again today if you had to do it over? If there is, the next question is, how do I get out of this investment, and how fast? It is sad to see how many people and companies keep investing money in an area that, knowing what they now know, they would never invest in at all if they had to do it over. Imagine starting over again today. The third area of zero-based thinking has to do with emotions. According to psychologists, people hate to lose time, money, or emotion of any kind. They often have a mental block about losses, refusing to admit them and attempting to recoup them in some way. Throughout your life, you'll invest a lot of emotion in people, projects, and situations. You'll put your whole heart into making the situation or relationship work. But at the end of the day, you will have to admit that you were not successful. Your investment of emotion has been lost. It is gone forever. It cannot be retrieved or recouped. It is a sunk cost. It takes tremendous character to face up to the reality of a failed situation or relationship and admit that you were wrong, you made a mistake, and you've changed your mind. But the more often you practice zero-based thinking, the more flexible you become. As Charles Darwin wrote, survival goes not necessarily to the strongest or most intelligent of the species, but to the one most adaptable to change. The big payoff. Here is the good news. When you finally have the courage to put an end to a zero-based thinking situation, you will have the same reaction that people have all over the world. First, you will feel a great sense of relief, even exhilaration and liberation. You will feel as though a great weight has been lifted off your shoulders. Second of all, you will ask yourself, why didn't I do this a long time ago? The thinking skill of zero-based thinking is absolutely essential if you want to realize your full potential in your work and personal life. And the more you practice it, the better you get at it. Soon, you will be able to say, there is not a situation in my life that I would change or get out of today if I had to do it over. The 7 R's of superior thinking. Sometimes the simplest ideas can jar your thinking and cause you to see your situation in a completely different way. The key is for you to always be open to the possibility that whatever you are doing, you could be completely wrong. There could be a completely different and better way to do almost anything, and there usually is. Here are 7 thinking tools you can use to increase your flexibility and your mental agility. Number 1, rethinking. This requires that you stop the clock, take a time out, and stand back to look at your situation objectively. Ask yourself 3 questions. What am I trying to do? How am I trying to do it? And could there be a better way? Whenever you experience frustration or resistance of any kind in your attempt to achieve your goals, personal or business, step back and ask yourself these 3 questions. Very often you will find that what you are trying to do is not the correct thing to do, or is not as important as it used to be. You may find that the way you are trying to do it is not working. And by asking if there could be a better way, you open your mind to an infinite number of possibilities, because there's almost always a better way. Number 2, reevaluating. Practice zero-based thinking and consider the possibilities of doing things completely differently. Whenever you are not happy with an ongoing situation, ask yourself, If I were not now in this situation, knowing what I now know, would I get into it again today? If the answer is no, how do you get out of it, and how fast? Number 3, reorganizing. Look for ways to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of your operations by moving people and resources around and by deploying them in different ways. What are your most important goals in your work and business right now? Have they changed? Who are your most important, valuable, and productive people? How can you reorganize your work so that your best and most productive people are focused on your most important goals and greatest opportunities? Number 4 is restructuring. This involves moving your people and resources into the 20% of activities that can account for 80% of your results. What are the 20% of results that account for 80% of the income and profits of your business? What are the top 20% of your activities that account for 80% of your total results? Who are the top 20% of your staff who produce 80% of the total results? In business, your primary concern should be revenue generation. Move your very best people into those areas where they can have the greatest positive effect on generating more revenue for your company. The 5th way of thinking is called re-engineering. Continually seek for ways to simplify your work and life by delegating, outsourcing, downsizing, or eliminating certain activities altogether. What are the activities or processes that you can simplify and streamline so that they can be done faster and with less time and money? What are the activities that you can delegate to others or outsource to specialist companies? What are the activities that you could eliminate altogether with no real loss of productivity, sales, or profitability? Each time you ask one of these questions, you will stimulate your creativity and get answers that you can apply to streamline your business and get more and better results faster and cheaper. Number 6 method of thinking is reinventing. Continually imagine what you would do differently if you were starting over again today. Imagine starting your business or department over again today. What would you do differently? What would you do more of? What would you do less of? What would you start doing that you are not doing right now? And what would you stop doing completely? These questions will give you ideas and insights every time you ask them. What should you do more of, less of, start, or stop? And number 7, regaining control. This requires that you take specific action in your work and business based on your answers to the 6 R's. What one action are you going to take immediately regarding your own personal work and activities? What one action are you going to take immediately regarding your staff? What one action are you going to take immediately regarding the business itself? In each case, imagine that you have no limits. Imagine that you have all the time and money, all the talents and abilities, all the friends and contacts, and all the resources you need to be, do, or have anything in your business or personal life. Your main job is to become absolutely clear about the right thing, the best thing to do, and then to commit wholeheartedly to the new course of action. Now here are 3 action exercises for you. Number 1, examine your personal and corporate business model. Ask yourself if there could be a better way for you to generate sales, profitability, and personal income. 2, apply the Quink analysis to every part of your business and personal life. Ask, knowing what I now know, is there anything that I am doing that I would not get into again today if I had to do it over? And number 3, what should you do more of, less of, start, or stop altogether to get different and better results? Chapter 8, Creative Thinking versus Mechanical Thinking. Napoleon Hill said, "The imagination is literally the workshop wherein are fashioned all plans created by man." Creative thinkers rule the world. They are continually seeking faster, better, and easier ways to accomplish goals that are important to other people. They practice the CANI principle, which stands for Continuous and Never-Ending Improvement. They are responsible for all the great breakthroughs and innovations and progress in human history. They know that sometimes one good idea is all it takes to change the course of a business or an individual life. Mechanical thinking. Mechanical thinking, on the other hand, tends to be rigid and inflexible. It is my way or the highway. Mechanical thinking is rooted in fears of failure, making a mistake, and losing time, money, or both. It is triggered by fears of criticism or disapproval, trying something that doesn't work. Poor thinkers think in terms of black and white rather than in shades of gray. They think in extremes of yes versus no, up versus down. They think there is only one way when there are usually many ways. In the face of change and confrontation, they develop psychosclerosis, which is defined as a hardening of the attitudes. They are victims of homeostasis, a striving for constancy. They are stuck in their comfort zone. They resent and fear anything new or different, even an improvement in conditions. But this is not for you. You are a potential genius. You have more creative potential than you could use in 100 lifetimes. The more of your creative ability you use, the more you can use. You actually become more creative each time you come up with something new. It is said that every child is born a genius, and this means you, throughout your lifetime. It turns out that creativity is the single best indicator or predictor of success in life and in work. The more creative you are, the more and better ideas you will come up with to improve your life, work, and everything around you. One good idea can be enough to change the entire direction of your life. How do you recognize creativity? Creative people are curious. They ask a lot of questions and are never satisfied. In fact, you can become more creative just by asking more questions about the things going on around you and not being content with superficial answers. Genius throughout the ages. There are many studies of the qualities of geniuses throughout the ages. The first fact they discovered was that intelligence was not a matter of IQ or academic qualifications. Many so-called geniuses had average or slightly above average intelligence. Genius or excellent thinking was instead more a matter of attitude and approach toward the inevitable challenges of life. It appears that geniuses have three qualities developed over time. Keep an open mind. First, they approach every problem or situation with an open mind, almost a childlike attitude of exploration and discovery. The more open your mind is to completely new and different approaches to any situation in your life, the more likely it is that you're going to get insights and ideas that move you out of your comfort zone, that enable you to think outside the box. They continually ask why and why not and what if. Second, geniuses carefully consider every aspect of a problem, refusing to jump to conclusions, gathering more and more data instead. They test and validate their tentative conclusions at each stage. They avoid a rush to judgment. They're always open to the possibility that they could be wrong or that their idea is no good. The best solution. Albert Einstein was once asked, if there was a major emergency or potential disaster that was going to destroy the Earth in 60 minutes, and you were asked to find a solution, what would you do? Einstein replied, I would spend the first 59 minutes gathering information and the last minute solving the problem in the best possible way. In business today, especially in new product development, the more time you spend working closely with customers to be sure that your new product or service idea is exactly what they want, need, and are willing to pay for, the more likely it is that you will be successful in a fast-changing and highly competitive market. The systematic approach. Third, geniuses of all kinds use a systematic approach to problem-solving and decision-making. Accomplished mathematicians, physicists, doctors, mechanics, and people in other professions do not throw themselves at a problem like a dog chasing a passing car. They rather follow a carefully designed checklist and work their way through a problem step by step toward a conclusion. Atul Gawande, in his book The Checklist Manifesto, tells the story of two investment experts, both successful, but one far more successful than the other. It turned out that they both had many years of experience in evaluating and making substantial investments for themselves and their clients. But the more successful advisor had developed a checklist of essential questions to ask and tests to apply to an investment proposal before making a decision. The other advisor used many of the same techniques and tactics to appraise an investment, but he operated more from intuition and experience. As a result, he often lost money when he shouldn't have. Here was the interesting point that Gawande made. The first advisor was consistently more successful than the others, but on various occasions he made mistakes and lost money. The reason was invariably the same. He had neglected to follow his own checklist. He had missed one or two vital points in his list of important considerations. When he went back to following his checklist meticulously, his investment record improved significantly. The systematic problem-solving method. Here is a structured, unstructured way of problem-solving and decision-making developed by experts and think tanks over the years. I have synthesized the best ideas I have discovered into a single, simple method you can use for the rest of your career. Step 1. Define the problem or goal clearly in writing on the page in front of you. If you're working with a group, write and rewrite the problem or goal on a flip chart or whiteboard until everyone agrees that, yes, that is the correct definition of the problem. In medicine, they say accurate diagnosis is half the cure. In business, developing the correct definition of the problem often makes the solution appear obvious. Step 2. Once you have defined the problem or goal clearly, you then ask, what else is the problem? Beware of any problem for which there is only one definition. Define and redefine the problem several different ways to make it more amenable to the correct solution. Note, it may not be a problem at all, but rather an opportunity. The worst thing you can do is to come up with a great solution to the wrong problem or to a problem that does not exist. Product failure rates. Fully 80% of new products and services fail within 12 months. The primary reason for this is that companies develop a product that solves a problem that customers don't have. It's like the story of the dog food company that invested many millions of dollars developing the perfect dog food, nutritionally balanced in every way. But the product failed in the market. When they asked the product developers what had happened, they replied, "The problem was that the dogs hated it." Whatever definition of the problem that you settle on is going to determine the direction of the solution. If your problem definition is incorrect, your solution, however brilliant, won't work. Sales improvement process. In my work with sales organizations, I take them through a systematic process of creative thinking. In almost every case, the number one problem that a business faces is low sales. So we start off with our question, what is the problem? The first definition of the problem is, our sales are too low. What else is the problem? We are not attracting enough new customers. What else is the problem? The customers that we do attract are not buying enough. What else is the problem? We are not converting enough of our prospects into paying customers. What else is the problem? Our advertising and promotion are not attracting enough new customers. What else is the problem? Our customers are not buying often enough. What else is the problem? Our customers are buying too much from our competitors. Keep asking the what else question until you find the correct definition of the problem. The definition determines the solution. Whichever of these answers that you decide upon, if it is the correct problem, requires a different and sometimes a completely different solution. This is why it's so important that you test and validate your answer to be sure that you're working on the right problem in the first place. Step 3, you ask, what is the solution to our problem? Whatever answer you come up with, you ask, what else is the solution to our problem? Beware of a problem for which there is only one solution. There is a direct relationship between the number of possible solutions you develop and the quality of the final solution that you settle upon. Very often, two unrealistic ideas combined together could turn out to be one brilliant idea that changes the direction of your business. Step 4. Once you've developed a wide range of possible solutions, you must narrow them down and make a decision. In most cases, any decision is better than no decision at all. If you cannot make a decision immediately, set a deadline by which you will make your decision and take action. Steve Jobs once said, "Creative ideas come from connecting the dots in a different way. Here is the key used by superior thinkers everywhere. If you're struggling with a decision, collect more dots. Get more information. Hire a consultant who specializes in this area. Don't be cheap in collecting the best information possible. One new or unconsidered idea can make or save you a fortune. Step 5. Determine how you will measure the success of this decision. Set clear measures and benchmarks. Quantify your desired results. The rule is this. If you want to succeed in business, set measures for everything. If you want to get rich, set financial measures for everything. Remember, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And what gets measured gets done. Step 6. Assign responsibility for the project, task, or subtask to a specific person or persons. Every product, service, or project needs a champion. Someone who is completely in charge of the project and whose personal success, pay, and promotion are determined or strongly affected by the results. A major mistake that companies make, small and large, is that they agree on a new product or service idea or on a project of some kind, and then everyone goes back to work. No one has been assigned the specific responsibility of this project. This then becomes an orphan project in the company, something that belongs to everyone and to no one. Don't let this happen in your business. Step 7. Set a deadline and sub-deadlines for completion. The more important the potential results, the more often and more accurately you must manage and measure progress. Inspect what you expect. What gets inspected gets done. Step 8. Develop a plan B, a fallback plan or alternative in case your first solution does not work for any reason. Fill out the disaster report. Ask, what is the worst possible thing that could happen in this situation? The worst possible outcome is that it could fail completely, and all the time and money invested will be lost. How could you minimize the possibilities of failure? How could you maximize the possibilities of success? What will you do if your solution doesn't work? Develop a fallback plan. Great generals plan to win every battle, but they prepare for defeat if it occurs. They set aside reserves of men and ammunition. They develop a contingency or fallback plan. They know that an orderly retreat is better than a complete rout. Never bet the ranch on a new course of action. Only take calculated risks, risks that you can bounce back from if they fail completely. Hope is not a strategy. It is a formula for disaster. In business, the new product idea of build it and they will come is almost a sure recipe for failure. Step 9. Take action on your idea. Move fast. Develop a sense of urgency. Do something, do anything, but get on with it as quickly as possible. General George Patton said, "A good plan, violently executed now, is always superior to a perfect plan, not executed at all." Apply this systematic method of problem solving to each problem or obstacle that your business faces, disciplining yourself to follow the recipe for superior thinking. You will be happily surprised at the results. Solution-focused thinking versus problem-focused thinking. The true mark of your intelligence and your creativity is your ability to solve problems and make decisions. Whatever title is written on your business card, your true job description is problem solver. From the time you start work in the morning until the time you quit for the day, and afterwards, you are solving problems, small and large, all day long. General Colin Powell said, "Leadership is the ability to solve problems." Success is the ability to solve problems as well. A goal or objective unachieved in any area is merely a problem unsolved. This is why a systematic approach to problem solving, one that works at a higher level and more consistently, is absolutely vital for you to achieve the maximum of success that is possible for you. Think about solutions. As it happens, successful people think about solutions most of the time. Unsuccessful people think about problems most of the time. Successful people think about how to solve the problem or remove the obstacle, and what actions can be taken immediately to improve the situation. Unsuccessful people think about the problem and who is to blame. They allow themselves to become upset and angry about a problem that occurs or an obstacle that arises. This triggers negative thinking, anger, and the search for the guilty party. Who did it? But it does nothing to help them to find the solution. Unlock your creative powers. There are three keys to unlocking your creative powers that we have spoken about before. They are clarity, focus, and concentration. First, you must be clear about the goal, but flexible about the process of achieving it. Keep an open mind. Be willing to consider a variety of different ways to achieve the same result. Second, focus. Bring all of your brain power and that of others to focus like a laser beam on a single problem, obstacle, or difficulty without diversion or distraction. Stay on one subject at a time. Third, concentration. Put aside everything else and concentrate 100% until you have solved your biggest problem or achieved your most important goal. Jim Collins, in his book Good to Great, tells the story of the fox and the hedgehog, which comes from an essay by Isaiah Berlin. He said that the fox is very clever and knows many things, but the hedgehog is more successful because he knows one big thing. Clarity, focus, and concentration enable you to bring all your mental powers to bear on solving one big problem or achieving one big goal. The attraction of distraction. In our modern world of computers and email, perhaps the greatest enemy is the attraction of distraction. Chasing after shiny objects, email, text messages, phone calls, and social media, all of which cause your mind to scatter and disrupts your ability to focus and concentrate. According to USA Today, continuously responding to electronic interruptions, especially email and text messages, burns up your brain fuel, glucose, at a rapid rate. The average adult checks their email all day long, 45 times per day in some studies, and is constantly distracted like an attention deficit disorder dog by signals and alarms on their email and smartphone. As a result, the average email-addicted employee loses 10 full IQ points each day, becoming dumber by the hour. By the end of the day, many people are burned out, unable to concentrate or make even the simplest of decisions, and they are further and further behind on their key tasks. Multitasking versus task switching. Constantly responding to emails, text messages, and phone calls forces the individual to engage in what is called multitasking. However, this is more rightly defined as task switching. You are not doing several tasks. Instead, you are switching back and forth from task to task and then back again. According to one study, it takes you about 17 minutes after you have broken off a task to respond to an incoming message for you to get back on task again. Throughout the day, your attention switches back and forth, like a windshield wiper, seldom completing anything of value. When you add in social media and the obsession that many people have with checking Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, you have a formula for career disaster. This is why we say that social networking is social not working. The solution is simple. Leave things off. Check your email twice a day at 11 a.m. and at 3 p.m. Other than that, turn everything off so that you can dedicate yourself single-mindedly to the task at hand. The principle of constraints. This is one of the best creating thinking tools of all. The principle of constraints says that between you and any goal, there is a constraint that determines how fast you achieve that goal. Sometimes this is called the bottleneck. Sometimes it is referred to as the choke point. Andrew Grove, former president of Intel, referred to the main constraint holding you back as the limiting factor in any production process. What is your major goal today, and what is the constraint that sets the speed at which you achieve it? To rephrase this question, why aren't you already at your goal? If your goal is to increase your sales and profitability by 50%, why aren't your sales and profitability already 50% higher? If your goal is to lose weight, why aren't you already at your ideal weight? When you ask this question, very often the answer you come up with is the constraint that is holding you back. Often when you ask and answer this question, what will pop into your mind will be your favorite excuses, the reasons that you most commonly give for non-achievement in a particular area. Identify the limiting factor. In each situation, your first job is to identify this limiting factor and then focus single-mindedly on alleviating it. This way of thinking and acting can move you toward your goals faster than almost anything else you can do. The 80-20 rule applies to constraints in your personal and business life. Fully 80% of the factors that are holding you back from achieving your most important goals are within yourself or within your business. Only 20% are on the outside, external to you and your business. When you begin identifying and removing constraints, always start with yourself. Ask the key question, what is it in me or my business that is holding me back from achieving my goal? Remember, the natural tendency of most people is to blame their problems on external forces and other people. The hallmark of the superior thinker is that they accept complete responsibility for any problem or difficulty, and then they look into themselves for what is setting the speed at which they achieve the goal they desire. What if thinking? One of the most powerful questions you can ask in triggering creativity is, what if? Each time you ask this question, you break the bonds of unlimited thinking that may keep you working in a narrow area, and you open your mind to more and more possibilities. What if thinking is considered to be the breakthrough concept that made Federal Express one of the most successful companies in the world? It started by asking, what if it was possible to deliver a letter overnight anywhere in the country? When Fred Smith, the president of FedEx, suggested this idea in his MBA thesis at Harvard, his professor gave him a C grade, saying that the idea was not very realistic. At that time, first-class postage and mail in the United States took anywhere from 3 to 5 days, and sometimes longer, to reach its destination. The idea of overnight mail delivery seemed highly improbable. Break the barriers. By continually asking, what if, Fred Smith and the executives of FedEx were able to develop creative ideas that not only achieved the goal, but led to one of the largest and most successful companies in the world. What if it was possible to put the keyboard on the screen of a cell phone? That was the question asked by Apple, now the largest company in the world. What if we could sell and deliver almost any book by email and direct home delivery? That was Amazon.com, now the biggest vendor of books in the world. What if we could put a man on the moon and bring him safely back to Earth? That was John Kennedy in 1962. When President John Kennedy asked the scientist in charge of the American space program, Wernher von Braun, what would it take to put a man on the moon and bring him back safely? Von Braun replied simply, the will to do it. In many situations, in your business and personal life, what is most required for success is simply the will to do it. My friend Joel Weldon was famous for his talk, success comes in cans, not in cannots. It's the same with you. The process of innovation. The philosophy of every successful business and successful executive is CANI, which, as said above, stands for continuous and never-ending improvement. Resolve to move boldly out of your comfort zone. Continually search for newer, better, faster, and cheaper ways to achieve your goals and to move ahead. Be prepared to fail over and over again when you are developing or introducing new products, services, methods, or strategies. Nothing ever works out the way you think it will. You will experience constant frustrations, difficulties, setbacks, and temporary failures on the way to success. Thomas J. Watson Sr., the founder of IBM, was once asked how to succeed faster. He replied, "If you want to succeed faster, you must double your rate of failure. Success lies on the far side of failure. In fact, there is no such thing as failure. There is only feedback. Difficulties come not to obstruct, but to instruct. The formula has always been try, try again, and then try something else." Your ability to solve problems, make decisions, and find creative, innovative ways to grow your business, increase your sales, and boost your profits is the ultimate key to your success. Now, here are 3 action exercises for you. Number 1, select one problem that you and your business is wrestling with today and put it through the systematic method of problem solving. It could change your future. Number two, identify one goal that you have and determine the biggest constraint, the limiting factor that sets the speed at which you achieve that goal. What could you do to alleviate this constraint? And number three, select one product or service you offer and develop as many ways as possible to make it better, faster, or cheaper for your customers. Chapter 9, Entrepreneurial Thinking versus Corporate Thinking. Be true to the best you know. This is your high ideal. If you do your best, you cannot do more. H.W. Dresser. All people want to achieve the highest possible level of financial success in the course of their careers. According to Thomas Stanley, author of The Millionaire Next Door, fully 80% of self-made millionaires are entrepreneurs. They started and earned their fortunes in one lifetime by starting and building their own businesses, by producing and selling something to someone. They thought and acted like entrepreneurs most of the time. According to the March 2015 Forbes magazine, there are 1,826 billionaires in the world today, 66% of whom are self-made. They started as entrepreneurs with nothing and built their fortunes from the ground up by creating and selling products and services that people wanted and were willing to buy and pay for. Think about customers. Entrepreneurial thinking means focusing on the customers at all times, thinking about the customers continually. Tom Peters wrote in his book, The Search of Excellence, that the single most important quality of successful business was an obsession with customer service. Not long ago, I spent a day with the president of a $2 billion company that he had started at his kitchen table. When I asked him what position he saw himself as having in his business, he immediately replied, Chief Sales Officer. He said, this was my position when we started, and it is still my position today. I think about sales all the time. Corporate thinking. Corporate thinking is different from entrepreneurial thinking. Company people, whether employees, managers, executives, or technicians, view customers either with disinterest or even as problems who are always complaining and requesting something new or different. Customers are often seen as flies that have to be swatted and brushed away. Corporate thinkers are preoccupied with doing their jobs, pleasing their superiors, following the rules, and doing the minimum necessary to avoid being fired or laid off. Corporate types, employees, use the pronoun them, they, their, and the company to describe the company and the people in charge. They feel that whatever happens in the company has little to do with them personally. They say, a job is a job. As one corporate type told me some time ago, when I go to work, I think about my job, but when I come home, I don't think about my job or company at all. Lack of engagement. Many researchers conclude that more than 60% to 70% of employees at large and small companies are disengaged. They feel no deep commitment or loyalty to the company. They are just going through the motions of work, thinking about doing something else. They check the want ads on a regular basis, put their resumes and qualifications onto Craigslist, LinkedIn, and websites, and are continually looking for something else to do. Corporate types come to work at the last minute, take every minute of coffee breaks and lunches they can, and spend as much as 50% of their time chit-chatting with coworkers, checking their emails, and doing things of low or no value to their company. Commitment is the key. Entrepreneurial thinkers are different. They are committed to the success of the company. They see themselves as self-employed and act as if they own their companies personally. They use words like we, mine, and our when they refer to their company and to their products and services. Above all, they accept and take on high levels of responsibility for results. Entrepreneurial thinkers are always volunteering for more responsibility. They continually think about making a greater contribution. They are continually upgrading their skills, learning new things, and seeking ways to become more valuable to their companies. Above all, entrepreneurial thinkers search for ways to increase the sales and profitability of their companies. Entrepreneurial thinking is customer-centric, customer-focused thinking. Entrepreneurial thinkers think about customers all the time. Sales are central. As we said in a previous chapter, the number one reason for business success is high sales. The number one reason for business failure is low sales. All else is commentary. The key to business success is SMS, which stands for Sell More Stuff. This is what the entrepreneurial thinker focuses on most of the time. How can we sell more stuff? There are several ways for you to develop the qualities of entrepreneurial thinking and to make a greater contribution to the sales and profitability of your organization. Remember the three keys: clarity, focus, and concentration. Ask the basic questions. There are basic business questions that